Investment advisory services offered through Independent Solutions Wealth Management and Blackridge Asset Management LLC. Peak Broker Services LLC is not an affiliate of Independent Solutions or Financial Guys LLC.
You're listening to The Financial Guys.
We're $23 trillion in debt, honey. We don't have an extra surplus of money.
Newsflash, guys. Stop attacking businesses, because when all the businesses are gone, nobody's going to pay your salary anymore. You get that?
If the goal is to create a loser mentality, you're winning.
I'm going to build a big, beautiful wall with a big, beautiful door. Well, guess what? We have a big, beautiful door, all right? It's the wide
it's
open
90%.
Southern border, right?
Yeah.
Here's Glenn Wiggle and Mike Lomas.
All right, welcome back to the Financial Guys podcast. Glenn Wiggle, Mike Lomas, the podcast where money meets politics. And we're going to talk mainly money today, although there will be some politics involved, because I do think that there is a political solution to the crisis that we're facing. So, special podcast edition. It's Tuesday morning. The markets are not quite yet open. This will be released later today or tomorrow. And, you know, obviously, it looks like the futures are pointing to the upside to regain some of the absolute bloodbath from yesterday. Sort of, yeah.
Not really.
Not quite,
I mean,
totally,
the futures are all over. They're a joke. Don't even bother. I don't normally agree with Kramer, but he said don't even bother looking at the futures because bull markets don't start or end at 3:30 in the morning, and I agree with that. So
yeah, very true. Yeah,
last night they're all over the place, and doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Last night it looked like the futures were up, but they limited out last night actually on the upside again.
Yeah.
And then by this morning they were flat, and then to negative, and then back to positive. So we'll see what happens. I mean, we're going to, you know, continue to fluctuate, you know, wildly here, I think, for the next couple of weeks until we get some leadership out of Washington. And I'm not necessarily talking about President Trump, although in a way I am, and I think he's part of it, right? So he did a press conference last night at 3:30, not last night, yesterday afternoon. And when he announced the press conference at 3:30, the markets actually rallied off of the lows of the day. So the markets opened up down close to 3,000 points. And once they announced the press conference at 3:30, the markets perked up and actually trimmed those losses to, you know, about a little bit more than half. It was down about 1,800 points, you know, midday and after the announcement of the meeting. And I think the hopes were that they were going to announce something substantial. Congress and I have a deal. We've reached an agreement. Here is the package. Here's the stimulus we're going to come out with. And we have some specific ideas that we'll talk about during this podcast on what the president could do. But that's not what the press conference was yesterday.
No.
The press conference was, well, we're trying to get a handle on this, and this could last till August.
What was he thinking, by the way?
You do that after the market closes. But he did that, and the market went from down 1,800 and started to even pair even further because it looked like he was going to say something positive, and then we closed down over 3,000 points. I mean,
you want to lead us out of this mess. You don't talk about the end game. You talk about the short-term game. And I'm a visionary person. I believe in business. You come up with the end game. But right now, it's all about seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And it's not really about getting the Dow Jones Industrial Average back to 30,000. It's about stopping the bloodbath and moving the Dow Industrial Average in the right direction, not the wrong direction. And so you start to talk about, hey, look at the case. If it's me, I'm talking about the fact that the cases are already going down in China. I'm talking about the rapid development and some of the breakthroughs that may actually cure this thing within the next 2 weeks, right? And I'm talking about the fact that, hey, look at, if we just hunker down and make it through the next 2 weeks, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and we're going to break this thing, and we're going to move forward with our lives and get on with it. You don't say this thing could drag on until August, and certainly it could. It's the flu, by the way. It's the flu. I get it. It's a tough strain of the flu. But, the media, by the way, and I'll talk about specifically the media here in just Buffalo, New York, as an example, right? So yesterday they said, or the other day, I'm reading an article, it was yesterday or the day before, right?
Yesterday.
And it says, an employee of M&T Bank headquarters has the coronavirus. Now, Glenn, when I say that to you, what do you think?
I'm like, oh, my God. He would think that everyone who went to any M&T Bank in Western New York
any time
in the last week would be freaking out based on that headline. Absolutely.
Now, guess how many times this person entered the bank?
I don't know. Let's say zero, perhaps?
Zero, right. Another one, Tops Warehouse. Now, for those of you outside the Western New York area, Tops is like a Publix down in South Florida. It's a major grocery store here, right? Tops employee has coronavirus. Yeah. What do I think? Oh, my gosh.
Right.
Wow, this person was – guess how many Tops this person went into?
Yep.
Zero.
Right.
Right. Shame on the mainstream media. I mean, it's zero to do with where they work unless they actually work there with the virus.
Exactly.
Right? You're just adding to the hysteria
and
the bullshit that you know. So the guy, these two people have the flu. They never entered work. Don't mention the fact that they're there because you're just going to add to it.
Well, the guy from M&T Bank, he just came back from Europe, right? He just came back from a trip overseas. I believe it was Europe, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
And so, but the fact that he worked at M&T Bank
had nothing to do with the story
unless he went back to work with the virus, right?
Yes.
Like, how come, like, when somebody else comes down with it, well, so and so there's all sorts of people that have been tested positive in New York City.
Not
once did they say worked at this grocery store or worked at this bank, or they haven't listed anywhere where these folks have worked.
Right.
So, again, you're absolutely right, and this is irresponsible on the part of the media, right? If the fact that he didn't go to M&T Bank or the fact that he worked at M&T Bank has no bearing on the story whatsoever, then leave it out of the headline.
That's right.
You could put it in the story somewhere, like, thank goodness he didn't go back to work because he worked at M&T Bank. We dodged a bullet there.
Right.
But when you put it in the headline, it's completely misleading.
Yes.
And they've done it over and over and over again.
Every
one of them. So Trump needs to address a little bit of that as well. And he's done that, I think, in a way. But here's the package. Let me unveil what I think we need right now from Washington. And the fact that Nancy Pelosi is trying to load up a bill and play politics with people's, you know, livelihoods and businesses and careers or whatnot is not just irresponsible. It's just shameful. It's just absolutely shameful.
Absolutely. They could care less, by the way, if the Dow's at 10,000 or 15,000.
Well,
all they care about is beating Donald Trump. That's it.
That's it. That's all that matters.
This is such a huge blessing for them. I was watching Andrew Cuomo yesterday. What a dirtbag he is, right? Yeah. He's, we're not getting any leadership from the feds. Why? Well, let me tell you this, Andrew. If you didn't piss away $1 billion on a warehouse that's vacant in the city of Buffalo, you'd have $1 billion to spend on fighting this, right? What do you need Donald Trump for? What do you need help for? You want to be president. Take it over.
Right. Well, the reality of it is he's making hand sanitizers and holding press conferences and showboating. But what he's not doing is he's not instilling confidence in New Yorkers. And that's really what we need right now from all these political leaders.
Yep.
You know, there are some that have actually shown pockets of brightness. And I'll give credit. We talked about this last week to Governor Gavin Newsom. Not a big fan, obviously. He's a left-wing really progressive, but he understands right now that getting together and saying, I'm not going to bash Donald Trump, now's not the time, is really what we need. And I think what Donald Trump needs to do, here's what he needs to do as far as the optics go, and then let's talk about the policy response that we need to have from Washington. The Fed has done a good job as far as providing the liquidity that we need. They've spooked the markets. That's a mistake, in the way that they have done it, because they haven't explained their actions as to why they've done it. But that's water under the dam at this point, or over the dam, or under the bridge, or whatever the term is. from a policy or an optics perspective, what President Trump needs to do is what he did a while back with Pelosi and Schumer, where he put them on the couch, he sat between them, and Schumer sat there with his head between his knees going, and Trump just basically gave him a tongue lashing and a talking to and put them right on the spot. What Trump needs to do is bring in Pelosi, bring in Schumer, bring in the minority leader, McCarthy, I believe it is, in the House, and bring in Mitch McConnell, and sit all four of them down on the couch and not necessarily lambaste them or talk down to them, but put them on the spot and say, guys, girls, we need a response. Here's my proposal. And I would put the proposal there and say, now I want you to go back to Congress and hammer this deal out by tomorrow.
Yep.
And that's what you do.
In the public, though, Glenn, that needs to be mentioned that this is all about economics, right?
Yeah.
This is not the time, Nancy, to add on money for your abortions,
right?
It's not the time to add on your pork and all your other garbage that you're trying to do right now, right? Now is the time to make simple moves, really, simple moves. And we talked about one of them before the show is, you know, get rid of the uptick rule. From 1938 to 2007, you couldn't short a stock unless the last trade was an up, you know, price. The price was higher, right? So it really stopped a lot of that, you know, carnage from the free fall and the short falling. Well, they changed. The SEC came in 2007, changed it. I think maybe in 2010 it actually got revised again.
Yeah, but they put it back in temporarily, I think.
Yeah, put it back in temporarily. So, you know, that's a simple thing that I think Democrats or Republicans can say, look, nobody wants, hopefully, Nancy, you don't want the stock market to fall, right? And as your point is, do this in public. No, we don't want that. Nobody wants that. Okay, well, this is something that we can do rather simply and just get rid of it, right? And it'll stop a big chunk of that short selling, or at least the free fall of it. Real simple, easy to do. By the way, should have been done a week ago. I mean, after the first 12% move in one day in the stock market, that's something that I think you get together at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and say, let's implement this. Didn't do a thing. Not a thing.
No. Well, what Trump is proposing is he's proposing some payroll tax cuts, which is a little bit of a help. It's like, you know, it's
sort of
it's a little bit of a help, right?
You and I have been both pretty aggravated with the personal income tax rates, and you know, they cut the corporate tax rates in half, right? And that was really good. I don't want to take away from that. We've got a ton of money coming back to this country, a lot of companies coming back to this country. If a tax cut from 40% to 20% works for Apple Computer, it should work for Mike and Glenn and Mary Beth and Amanda, who owns the hardware store, and Joe, who owns the restaurant. Right now is the time to give people back their own money. It is the best economic stimulus, because there's no government BS in the way of it. It's no filter right to the economy.
So I think that's the policy that he comes out with. If I were Trump, I put them all on the couch and I say, here's the policy, folks, that I want. Here's what I want you guys to hammer out. I want a trillion plus economic stimulus package, but here's how we're going to do it, right? Instead of putting it in your hands so that you can decide on which unions get it and which teachers keep their jobs to make their contributions, we want everyone to keep their jobs, right?
Yep.
But teachers are still getting paid throughout this, right? Lots of folks that are, and that's the problem and that's the concern of why the markets are dropping, is what really is going to be the economic damage that we suffer? How much economic damage are we going to suffer?
Yeah. How many small businesses can make it through this?
That's right. A lot of this is self-inflicted, right? So, you know, the fact that we're shutting down, you know, restaurants and bars, and you know, we'll talk about some of the comparisons to the swine flu in a second. But you know, we're self-imposing economic damage, and what Trump needs to do is address that specifically, and that's what the people are concerned about, right? The restaurateur that can't pay his employees, those employees that can no longer pay their mortgage or their electric bill, or how far behind do they get, and where do the defaults come in? What the administration could do right now is a two-pronged approach: come out with the immediate solution and say, Nancy, Chuck, McConnell, I want you guys to go figure this out, right? Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, I would do an immediate tax credit for those that are filing. So if we're coming up on the tax time is right now, people are prepared, accountants are prepared. The easiest thing we can do is we can push a $5,000 to maybe $10,000 tax credit right through people's tax return, get that right back into their pocket, so that they know for sure that they'll now be able to pay their bills for the next, you know, 30 to 60 days, right?
And that's all you should need, really, truly.
That's all you need.
I mean, at this point, when you look at where that virus is going in China, right?
Yeah.
And we were way ahead of the game. Thank you, Donald Trump. That's a positive, right? Yep. You know, Chucky Schumer saying, why are we shutting off the borders to China? You just, you know, you don't like everybody, right? So, but of course, he deleted that tweet.
He was right.
He pulled that down. Yeah.
Trump was right. Absolutely.
We're ahead of the game, clearly. But and you know, one of Charlie in our office said this yesterday. He said, come on. I mean, really, if we were not way ahead of the game, do you know how explosive this would have already turned into with the amount of people on subways and trains in New York City? And he was spot on.
Absolutely.
Like, you're not kidding. That's what happened in Italy, right? That's what happened in China, right? They were all on these trains together, all that stuff. This is really probably, now we're testing it, right? Which I also think is a positive, because we're setting a base. Okay, we've got numbers now. You know, we've added on 5 people a day, 10 people a day, whatever it is. As you start to see that number go down now, that is also a positive, right? Yep. All right, we went from 10 a day, now we're down to 5 a day. This thing's moving out of the way and out of our lives, right? So to me, testing is also going to be a positive. But I do think there's two things. One is that I think they are way overcalling and way over predicting the amount of people that are getting this. I also think, and this is really a blessing to technology, and I talked about this on the radio show last night, you know, 20 years ago, this type of panic would have totally shut down the economy.
Right.
We are still doing Zoom meetings in our office, right? We're still processing paperwork, right? We have offices down in South Florida that are communicating with the Buffalo office and emailing paperwork back and forth, right? We can email paperwork to clients. So business is not perfect. It's certainly going down, but not nearly the shutdown that this would have caused 20 years ago without that technology. Technology, right? And it's funny, because I think you've been saying this, like the you know, technology, this may be the next phase in technology. I mean, if there's a positive that comes out of it might be the more willingness to say, instead of driving 35 minutes to see you, can I just bring up a Zoom meeting and look at each other on the computer, right? And I think, you know, some of that may allow for more efficiencies in the future as we move forward.
No doubt about it. And we talked about a little bit. I was on this morning, WFTL, talking about the Zoom meeting capabilities in our office. We just, not that we were predicting a coronavirus, but we were moving in the direction with this on-demand society, right? With these, the new generation and really all ages now wanting to watch something when you want to watch it. Like, I don't necessarily watch Tucker Carlson at night because I'm usually spending time with my kids or I'm falling asleep on the couch or whatever. Yeah. But I go back and I watch Tucker Carlson's clips on YouTube the next day.
Yeah.
Because I like those pieces. I don't necessarily watch the whole thing, but I watch it in the 8 to 10-minute chunks that I have time for. And the pieces that he puts out there, and if I want to go back and watch the whole thing, I certainly can. So for our office, we have equipped our training center just recently in the last 6 months with brand-new cameras, brand-new mixing boards, and brand-new equipment, you know, lav mics and such, so that we can basically give a presentation like we're doing Wednesday night for Social Security, and people can watch it from the comfort of their own home. They don't have to come in to see it. They can, just like they're there in the room, they can, you know, look and see that the instructor and listen
and
along.
And ask questions.
They can ask questions if they want to. We can open up for questions. And then here's the best part about it. We can record that so that if Wednesday night at 6 o'clock is not good for you, but let's say Sunday afternoon at 2 is better, and you want to download that and watch that video Sunday at 2 and then call us on Monday with any questions you have, we want to make sure you have that capability to do that, right? That's the that's the format that people want to have their information delivered to them. And certainly there's some businesses that have just been slower to do that.
Yeah.
Financial services is one of those. And so we're changing that, and we're kind of ahead of the curve on there.
To your point, by the way, with giving people back their own money, and I think that's really important, right? Giving people back their own money. It's not saying, okay, here, we're going to give, you know, this is the old stimulus where you don't go to work, you don't have a paycheck, you don't pay taxes, we're going to give you money. But the ones who actually go to work and take risk, or not, right?
Well,
give people back their own money. But I do think we've got to get back to the point where we stop bailing out all these companies because, you know, you can't tell me that you've been in business for 40 years and you don't have enough money and cash flow to operate for the next 3 weeks and we need to continue to save you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd certainly see, you're right now is a perfect time to sort of go through your portfolio and analyze and find those winners, those companies that have great balance sheets, that have good cash flow, that are still paying a dividend, that are down because they're down because the market's down, not because they're a bad business model. But you are, I mean, you're going to see the weak be exposed here. And I think you got to be really careful about staying away from some of those. But the strong will survive. They'll buy some of these weak companies. They'll get rid of the bad management, right?
Yep.
They'll get rid of the bad balance sheets and move on. Some of them will go out of the way. And I think you got to let that happen. I mean, I don't think enough of that happened during the last crisis, and you know we kept some of these companies around that did bad things, that made bad mistakes, and now we're back at bailing them out again. Like no, give people back their own money, let them make the decision on where the cash is going to flow.
Exactly.
The strong will survive. The strong will be bigger and better than ever. The strong will drive the stock market to Dow 40,000, and the weak will go away. And we have to get back to that.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, to your point, you know, when you in the last bailout and what they're likely to do here and what they're already doing is the airline industry, for example, has come to, because obviously their business has basically grinding to a halt here. They're going to the government to say, we need, you know, cash flow because we have to make our obligations. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those obligations are going to be fixed costs, you know, airport costs, things like that.
Yep.
But when it comes to the employees, you know, what they're saying is we want to make sure we can continue to pay our employees so that they don't have a hiccup. And again, it doesn't have this cascading effect.
Why them and not us?
But that's exactly right.
Right?
So
why them and not Mary Beth who owns the Value Hardware store?
That's exactly right. It doesn't. Yeah. It never gets to the small business owner, right? The small business owner is the backbone of this country. We make up 2/3 of the jobs in this country. Not necessarily Southwest Airlines, although I love Southwest and I want to help Southwest employees, but I want to help the employees. I don't feel like I need to go and have the money go directly to the airline industry. I'd rather have it in a form of a tax credit, right? So small businesses like ours that have to pay taxes at the end of the year because we try to set, we make our estimated payments, but usually I try to make it under, so I have to owe a little bit, just so, you know, it's just not, I'm not giving them money to then get back. You know, a $5,000 credit for us would be helpful. It wouldn't be, it wouldn't be life-changing, but it would certainly be a little bit helpful. But if you're the restaurant owner, it's definitely helpful, right?
Yep.
But if you're the individual, right, now you're that employee. Mm-hmm. Let's say the average employee in this country makes 60 to 80 grand, right? We're going to talk about losing potentially 1 month of your wages. That's $5,000 to $6,000 or $5,000 to $8,000, right? Or $5,000 to $7,000.
Mm-hmm.
You give that back right now in the form of a tax credit. And now they have that money to pay their bills for the next 30 to 60 days or whatever.
Yep.
And that takes all that fear off of the market, because you will have a lot of pent-up demand for things, but it takes away that fear of defaults and things like that.
Let me say this. If you really want to help the airline industry out long-term, you want to see their stock prices go up and allow them to be able to afford stuff, get rid of the massive amount of taxes you have on fuel so they can actually make some margins in their business, right?
Yep.
That's what the problem is. The problem is that, you know, the massive amount, you know, it's funny. I was talking to my dad the other day, and he was buying fuel at the reservation. He happened to go past it because he's got a piece of property past it. He goes, "You runners, do you believe it's $1.62 a gallon or something like that?" I say, yeah, they don't have to deal with all the, you know, political garbage that we have to deal with, right? So, I mean, talk about, you know, Southwest saving a few bucks every single gallon on one of those massive jet planes. You want to talk about them making some margins and putting some cash in the bank so they can afford some of these downturns? That's the way you do it. But, you know, we'll come out with some new rules and regulations in the future that they'll have to pay for now to set money aside for this, which they won't be able to afford, like the big bank regulations that they did during the last crisis, which was supposed to make the banks not too big to fail, but it actually put a lot of the small banks out of business. So now the banks got bigger and there was bigger banks to fail.
Right, exactly.
Almost like the plastic bag thing, which we should get into.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Let me just wrap up the proposal. So the first part of that, the immediate relief, is to, you know, reassure the market, reassure the individuals that we're going to put money back into your tax return so you can continue to pay your bills. If you're a waitress or you're a bartender or you're a service person or your business is shut down or you've been told to go home or whatever, you know, there's going to be money for you to make sure you continue to pay your bills. Now, we can take that back in the form of an additional, you know, take it back $1,000 a year over the next 5 years. We can just take it back in other ways or whatever. Yeah. But part two,
give them the money back.
Give them the money back.
I mean, some of these people are in 37% tax brackets and they live in the socialist state of New York or California and they take another
10. Right.
Yeah, 50% of their money. Give me a break.
So the second part of that now is, as you mentioned earlier, Mike, I would put forth a package right now to say that I'm going to make this, as President Trump, my campaign promise and my campaign pledge in my second term to lower the personal and the marginal tax rates and the capital gains tax rates, even if it's superficial from 15 down to 12 or something, at least to get them down. If he does that and that becomes the campaign rally on, we're going to put more money back in the American people's pocket by lowering their tax burden, and we're going to get our stuff together in Washington by lowering our costs and expenses at some point. Obviously, you can't do it now, but that would cost between $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion, somewhere in that range. It would be a huge, bold stimulus package, a la Trump style. But I think if you target it to go right back to the individuals, I think you're going to get a lot further, a lot quicker than this, you know, well, we're going to give a little bit for the airline. The airline's asking for this. Next thing you know, it's going to be the automotives are asking for this or that. All the weak industries, right, that we know. And again, as you mentioned, Mike, a lot of the weak industries are weak precisely because of the regulations.
That's right.
That weaken
them,
right?
That's right. You can make them stronger by getting out of their damn way and letting them actually run like businesses. Now, I'm not saying you deregulate the safety of it. You don't need to do that. I mean, Southwest, I think there's been one person killed in a Southwest plane. It was a lady that the window got hit by something, right?
Freak accident.
In their entire existence. I mean, it's pretty crazy, the track record that these companies have, right? It's the massive amounts of regulation, specifically in the fuel costs, that really hurt them. That's the big deal, right?
Absolutely. So this, you know, the article that I pulled that we just talked about, you know, the coronavirus package hits roadblocks amid a GOP opposition in the Senate. And this is exactly the problem, right? This is why the market dropped 3,000 points on Monday, precisely because of a lack of of announcing of some sort of a stimulus package to help these folks that are going to face economic harm by not being able to get to work based on the actions of these politicians. Let's keep this in mind. And this is where it's interesting, because the media is trying to pin it on Trump to say, you should be a better leader and you should be telling other states what they should be closing and what should be closed across the country. And Trump is saying, I'm not falling into that trap.
Are you
crazy? I start telling and dictating to the states what they should and shouldn't close, and now you're going to call me a dictator, right?
That's right.
I'd rather you call me lack of leader than call me a dictator, King Trump.
Don't these leaders make the decisions? Yeah, don't they? And they run for office to specifically for this, right? To step up during time. Right. King Cuomo wants to be King Cuomo. Why do you need King Trump to tell you what to do, Andrew? Right. You do it anyways. You just voted in all the power you want.
Right. Exactly.
What do you gave yourself unlimited authority. Why did you do that if you're asking for help from the federal government and Donald Trump on what to do? Right.
Yeah.
It's a total. He's trying to run for president next time. He's by the way, talk about unlikable. He looks like a miserable. You know what? His
Yeah,
place. So
he is miserable. He's miserable. Yeah. I mean, he hates Trump so bad. And you know,
this will backfire. By the way, my prediction is this will backfire on the Democrats.
I hope so,
because we're going to find out two things when we get through this mess. Number one, the flu wasn't as bad as the mainstream media made it out to be.
I think you're right on that one.
You know, they've already made it seem like this is going to hit every single industry. The headline for everyone is, "Oh my gosh, it's going through." You know, somebody in this building has it, and they've never in the building, but we're going to let you think that they have it in the building. So the flu in the U.S. is going to whittle its way down here, not as bad as we think. The other thing is, we are going to be in a recession. Well, I don't want to say recession, because a recession is technically two quarters in a row of negative growth, where I think there's actually time to see this thing spike up really fast in a recovery mode, because most businesses are doing what we do, right? They're working with their employees. They're figuring out a way around it. We're all pitching in together to get through this thing, and we're embracing technology to not make it as bad as it could possibly be,
right?
And so by embracing technology, the market here is pricing in Armageddon, right? I mean, we dropped the fastest we've ever dropped in a two-week period in 14 or 15 or 16 trading days.
Right.
So the market is already pricing in a massive recession. What if it's not a massive recession?
Right. Well, right? J.P. Morgan came out this morning or yesterday morning, and their chief economist said, you know, our baseline is a recession now, but we still see, you know, for the last half of the year. So what they're saying is first two quarters are going to be negative GDP growth. So you're going to have a recession based on the fact that quarter one and quarter two are going to probably have GDP shrinkage, economic shrinkage. Uh-huh. But what they're saying is the third and fourth quarter, that pent-up demand will go back to positive GDP and will finish the year at a sluggish 0.9, but still a positive. And that's kind of what at least J.P. Morgan's prediction is. We'll see what happens. But I think you're right, Mike. I don't think this is going to be – at least so far, it hasn't – they can't look – and Charlie Spraza in our office was right – they keep talking about the deluge in New York City and how bad, but yet we're still only at a few hundred people.
Right.
You know, and again, just by comparison, and I'm not a doctor, right? We're not doctors. I don't know how bad this is going to get. I hope they're wrong, like we all do. But when I compare this to the swine flu and the response, there was not in the media. Nobody talked about it. 700 people, and the swine flu, by the way, hit people that were 65 and younger more than it hit the older folks.
That's right.
Highly susceptible were college-age students. At Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, they had 700 kids that eventually tested positive for the swine flu.
They must have closed the university down, though, under Obama, right?
Never even closed it. Never talked about going to homeschooling.
Where was Andrew Cuomo then?
Never.
That's funny.
Never. So not only did they not close Cornell, they didn't close any of the SUNY schools, right?
Yep.
So,
4,000 people alone died Cornell. In the U.S. of the swine flu. 4,000
people. No, 12,000. 12,513 people or something like that.
68 million people had the swine flu. Nobody closed a thing. Nobody closed a thing. Think about that. What you just said, 700 people in a university had the swine flu. They didn't close even the university.
That's right.
Yeah.
They didn't close
it just
one
shows
university.
You our point in starting this off and the massive hysteria and the headlines and what they can do. By the way, I do think, you know, some of that is going to get this out faster, right? The testing out there. Wow, you're kidding me. None of my neighbors have this. None of my neighbors' neighbors have this. None of my family members have this. Wow. Can I please go back to work and get out of my house?
Right.
Can I please go out to dinner again? Like, come on. At some point, the problem with this, though, and I think we talked about this yesterday in one of our investment committee meetings, is, you know, if you scream wolf too many times, eventually people are just going to ignore it and go, oh yeah, right. It's like the hurricane warnings. Like, okay, this is going to be the worst season ever. Oh my God, it's coming right for you. Oh, nope, sorry. No, I went the other way. Sorry, I went the other day. Well, when it actually does come, people are going to go, okay, you've said this so many times. Last time we sat in our house for 2 weeks and nobody got sick, I'm not believing you, you know? So, I mean, that's the fear long-term with the backfire of some of this stuff.
That's right. So last week, we didn't really have a chance to talk about this, but I did pull this article, and it's still on the production table here. Last week, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson tested positive for the coronavirus. Amazingly, nobody that we know, however, it's all these politicians and leaders in Europe and health ministers. How is that possible?
And now he's fine, by the way.
He's fine.
This was
March 11th, right?
Yeah.
Today is March 17th. So 6 days later, on March 11th, they tested positive. They did spend a couple days in the hospital. They have now since been sent home, and they're making their recovery, right? So, you know, okay, 6 days, right? I'm sure they're not back to full health. But our friend Brian Breisinger, who is part of our partner group for Peak. I called him last week, 2 weeks ago for something. He's, you know, works with our Medicare company. And you know, he didn't get back to me. And I thought, well, it's not like Brian. So I called one of his guys in his office. He goes, oh, Brian is down with the flu. He's in Pittsburgh. He was down hard. He went down on Wednesday, and he didn't come back up for air until Tuesday. So basically the same 6-7 days. That was regular flu, not swine flu, not coronavirus flu or anything else like that, just regular flu. Certain people get hit really hard with the flu. Certain people don't, right?
That's right.
My daughter had the flu a couple years ago. It was very mild, and she missed, I think, a couple days of school, but ultimately only because she had a fever, never had it that bad, recovered easily. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not saying the swine flu is not gonna, or the coronavirus is not going to get worse and not going to travel, but so far it hasn't, and it seems like we're getting ahead of it. The real fear is the self-induced fact that we have shut down entire parts of our economy, and it looks like we're going to be doing more of that because I'm waiting for the airlines to basically say no more airline travel. And so what we need to do is just basically – you know, reinstill the confidence that Washington could come out with a stimulus package and say, here it is. We're going to put money back into the people's pockets that can't go to work so that we don't have defaults on mortgages and things like that. Yep. There's already some positive that he's done. And this is where the media, again, shame on the media, because they're fanning the flames of this by panicking people with fear, like the headlines we talked about. But they're also not reporting some of the positives. And I don't have the article in front of me, but I did hear—
the biggest positive should be all over the mainstream media, which is China's cases are going down.
Well, no, but that too. But I'm talking about actual policy actions here.
Of course.
I heard this on the radio, so I don't have the article in front of me, but I heard that he's waived. Of course, it's not anywhere in the media. I have to look it up, and maybe we'll do it during a break or something. But I heard that he's waived student loan payments for now. Again, to at least alleviate that pressure of having to people to have to make those types of loans. Now, is that true or not? I don't know. I got to look that up or whatnot. But I know there's other things that he has done that are positive that the media is not going to talk about in any way, shape, or form.
Let me just say this from an investment standpoint, it is imperative that you do not make panic decisions. And I know that's easier said than done. This is brutal, right? A 2-week pullback in the stock market, the fastest 2-week pullback in the history of the market. You know, two of the worst, out of the top three worst days ever, we've just seen two of them, right? It is imperative you do not make panic decisions. There is a lot of good companies out there. There's a lot of good positives out there. At some point, and this is the problem with timing the market, the news is going to turn from negative to more positive and the market's going to start a rally. And the market's going to open up high and it's going to continue to go higher and people are going to miss it. I do not believe you can time markets. We have gone through every market timing signal thing that you could possibly look at. Glenn and I have never found one that actually works, that gets people out at the top and at the bottom. The key is to make subtle, small adjustments along the way to try to take advantage of this, not making panic decisions along the way, and setting yourself up for the next move on the upside, right? The market will climb a wall of worry. And I always say, look at the other recessions, look at the other things we've been through. The market starts to go up and people start to scratch their head going, oh man, I don't know, how could the market be going up? A lot of people are saying, I'm just going to wait until this thing goes away, then I'm going to get back in. Well, guess what? The market will be considerably higher by the time you do that. So I'm not saying you make, by the way, I make the mistake of doing this a lot, I'm assuming you're a diversified investor already. Right. If you're not a diversified investor, if you have all your eggs in one basket, and that doesn't mean one financial planner, it means one asset class, right? You don't wait to try to diversify, because a lot of times people will say, well, I'll just wait until it comes back, right? I'll give you an example. The tech wreck in 2000, people said, I had all my money in these four tech stocks, I'm just going to wait until it comes back. Well, guess what the last sector to recover was? The tech stock, right? Intel just got back to where it was 20 years ago before this little hit. So it is imperative that if you are not diversified, you take this opportunity to diversify. If you are diversified, it's important you don't panic, and it's important you make subtle adjustments along the way, maybe some subtle rebalancing. People say, I don't know if we're at a bottom, I don't want to rebalance. So what? Rebalance, you can rebalance again if we're not at a bottom, right?
That's right.
Doesn't mean you can't do it twice. You take advantage of the tools that are out there. Take a step back. Breathe a little bit. We're all in the same boat. We've all been handed the same deck of cards. You just got to make sure you play them the right way. If you play the right way, you'll win the game long term. If you play them the wrong way, you'll get screwed and you'll be on the sidelines as stuff starts to move the other way. So it is absolutely imperative to take a deep breath, meditate if you need to, keep your head on your shoulders, and be proactive throughout this thing.
Yep, no doubt about it. I did find the article, by the way. It was Friday that this past Friday the 13th, President Trump announced that he would waive interest on all the federal loans amid the coronavirus outbreak, meaning borrowers could pause their payments without any penalties.
How is CNN not reporting that, right? I mean,
you
can't tell me that this is not a huge part politically driven, right?
No, CNBC did, so good for CNBC.
Because if that was Obama, that would have been a national press release, that would have been all over the place. Look at how great he is. Oh, my God. Right? This is the same guy that didn't shut anything down during the swine flu.
Not a thing.
But yet, now we have Obama. You know, I'm not saying, by the way, I don't believe in that. I really believe that, look, at some point as a nation, you know, I'm going to take a knock on Italy here, right? They say, oh, my God, Italy shut down. Of course Italy shut down. I mean, the grown men there are 40 years old. They're living with mom and dad. Of course they're shut down. Right? I mean, there's a whole country full of 60 million wimps, right? I mean, these people are 40 years old, and they're still taking their clothes from mom to wash it. Of course the country's shut down, right? So now we want that here? I mean, look, I'm not saying you don't take some precautions. We should have shut the nursing homes down. We should have, you know, anybody who's elderly, look, you don't want to catch this flu, right? Stay away from everybody, but give me a break. And I think at some point, is it unconstitutional to tell, like, companies, you know, you're not important? You can't open up unless you're an essential company. Who decides that?
How long is that going to last? I mean, let's be honest, right? So, King Cuomo and the governor of Ohio, by the way, is just absolutely in panic, right? I mean, Ohio is out of control. We may have 100,000 people.
Right.
You know, they shut everything down far before anybody else did. And they have, like, I don't know, 4 cases, right?
Right.
You know, but how long is that going to last? So Illinois, New York, Ohio, and I'm sure more states to follow. Palm Beach County has imposed a curfew, right?
Yeah.
You know, New York, no gatherings over 50 people. Restaurants, half capacity. Soon to be closed altogether, I believe, now, right? So now they're completely closed and takeout only. At some point, you know, are people going to say, I'm going to reopen. Enough is enough.
Yes.
Like, I don't want to stay home anymore. This is not spreading the way they expect it to. This self-imposed damage. Yeah. I have to go back to work. I'm a business owner. I own that bar. I own that restaurant.
Right.
I own that quote-unquote non-essential business.
Right.
That to me, when M&T Bank calls and says, I want my mortgage payment, that business seems pretty darn essential, right?
Bank's still open.
Bank's still open.
Andrew's not paying the bill.
Right?
Right.
So that's where I think, you know, you're going to get to a point in a couple weeks here very quickly where people are going to basically say, look, we're going to reopen no matter what, unless this thing takes caught wildfire across this country. And thus far, I just don't see the numbers.
Now, if it would have caught wildfire, it would have caught wildfire in New York City on the subways.
Right.
That's exactly where this thing would have gone. We would have already had 100,000 cases loose, right? Didn't happen. Hasn't happened.
Before we get to the plastic bag thing, which maybe we'll end with, this is a little bit disconcerting. I sent this to you. This is from Moody's. Not that Moody's is often right, but swooning stocks signal higher likelihood of Trump losing elections, according to Moody Analytics.
Well,
that's a scary thought.
Yeah, of course it is, though, right? I mean, when you think about that, just to take the step back for a second, because the headlines are, again, a bunch of bullshit. Of course it is, right? I mean, that's like saying, well, the stock market's at an all-time high. There's better odds Trump's going to win. Of course there's better odds, right?
Yeah.
But I will say that Joe doesn't know where he is. I mean, I actually feel really bad for him. He is saying some really amazing things right now that just, like, wow. I mean, somebody should say, let's take a step back and check him and make sure he understands he's still here at the United States of America, right?
They don't care. The deep state wants him in because they can nip it. Basically, he will just be a figurehead so that people like Brennan, not the new Brennan, whoever that is, the CIA, can run the government from a shadow of our intelligence apparatus.
Right.
You know,
ridiculous. Listen to him. Oh, Trump can win. He's like, what? Trump's going to win. He's the only one that's electable. Like, wow. Okay.
Well,
do you understand what you're saying? I mean, sometimes you can say that stuff, reset yourself, laugh at yourself, and move forward. He's not. He doesn't know where it is. Then I feel bad.
He forgot the name of his boss. He forgot the name of Barack Obama. He forgot the name of his boss. I mean,
so forgot his name.
He forgot
his Biden, he said.
Oh, Biden. Good Lord.
Yeah.
So this is Moody's basically saying, you know, the big change from a month ago. So a month ago, when the stock prices were, of course, higher, Trump's approval rating was at 47. And I think he's getting there's another poll coming out this week, which will tell a lot about where his approval rating is. But they had him winning, coasting to victory at that point, with 351 votes in the U.S. Electoral College to 187 for the Democrat challenger. But the financial markets have since plunged. This is almost like the Democrat playbook. Did Moody's give this to the Democrats beforehand? Here's what you need to do to get this to where you need to have a chance of actually winning. A drop in the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index to 2,500 points, roughly Thursday's closing level, would signal enough economic anxiety to cost Trump the election, Bernard Yaros, an economist at Moody's Analytics, said on Friday. The S&P would need to be at 2,500 or less for Trump to lose. He said it in an email to Reuters. He did not elaborate on the expected electoral college results in that circumstance. So
keep in mind, Glenn, though, this is the same company that downgraded everybody after their prices were already 50% off during the last crisis. Yeah,
yeah, I was going to say, that's why I said at the beginning with a grain of salt.
Well, we're going to downgrade mortgages now that they're 70% off. Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks for the guidance.
Exactly, yeah. The same exact Moody's that rated the paper AAA at some of the
I got a feeling that that's led by some academics who are a little bit late to the game.
Probably. Yeah. So let's close with this. Well, we talked a little bit about the what people need to be doing now, keeping their heads together. I talked this morning on WFTL about a couple different things, phases of investing. If you're accumulating, this is an opportunity, should be looked at such. If you're not using your money for 5 or more years, this is an opportunity for you to add more money to your 401k, rebalance your portfolio, buy down, things like that. Mm-hmm. If you're harvesting money, it's a different phase. Just make sure you're not liquidating shares to meet your income needs. Mm-hmm. Whether you're using, for our clients, we either have a short-term bucket that's in things that are a little affected by stock market moves, or we use annuity guaranteed income payments as part of that income plan for them. We also have, obviously, Social Security claiming strategists. We use strategies around Social Security to make sure we're maximizing our Social Security payments and the tax efficiency that goes with it. We use dividends, right, and interest as ways to provide income to our retirees and people that are harvesting income is what we should be looking at. But a lot of people, we talked about this before, got a little bit complacent. They had that retirement 2030 fund from the whatever company in their 401k. When they retired, they just moved that out, to the outside. It was doing okay, so they never really thought about it. And everything was fine.
Leave that old 401k there. It's fine. Right?
And it's okay if you're not using the money. If it comes down, they're going to do some rebalancing within that allocation fund. It's going to bounce back up. But if you're drawing income from that portfolio and you're liquidating those shares to meet your income needs, you are dollar cost averaging in reverse, which is essentially giving yourself a lower average sale price as opposed to when you're dollar cost averaging in a positive way, like your 401k, you're getting a lower average purchase price. So don't make that mistake. Be cautious. And if you are, it's still not too late to make adjustments. If you are drawing income from your portfolio, you can make subtle adjustments here, even with the markets down, to put yourself in a better position to not have to liquidate more shares. So if you need us, of course, give us a call at the office, 833-FIN-GUYS, or go to our website at thefinancialguys.com. Mike, let's end with this,
unintended consequences?
On a light note, I guess, in a way, because we like to laugh at New York State politicians. The plastic bag ban backfires. New York's environmentalists have terrible timing. The statewide ban on single-use plastic bags took effect on March 1st, the same day New York confirmed its first case of coronavirus. Mm. And, of course, they're thinking that these plastic bags, these reusable bags, are notoriously dirty and maybe actually spreading the virus. So
I think, by the way, they're going to be way, way less healthy for the environment, because what's happening is people are forgetting their plastic bag, walking into Wegmans or Tops or public, and then buying them again, right?
That's right.
So now you've got these actual big plastic bags that will be thrown out at some point, because what people are going to do, especially, by the way, when they're stuck in their homes for the next 2 weeks, is clean out their home, and they're going to say, oh, these little frail plastic bags that just melt away underground, oh, no, these last for 100 years, but I don't want 95 of them underneath my sink, so I'm going to get them out. Right? It'll be more harmful to the environment. It's actually more harmful to make them by far, than the other plastic, than the reusable plastic, or the plastic. Plastic bags.
Yep.
And now we're finding out that the Democrats have actually transferred the coronavirus. They're responsible for it through the plastic bags.
So these reusable bags, what people are doing with them, they did a study on this, and I think in Britain or somewhere, what they're finding out is that people are not reusing them. So they're forcing people to buy these reusable bags, like $1 a piece.
Yep.
And then what happens is, as soon as that raw chicken leaks on the bag, do you think that people throw it in their washer, or do they throw it in the trash bin? They throw it in the trash bin, and they spend $1 to buy another one of those things, right?
Yes.
And so they're actually going through more reusable bags. So despite the whole
fact that they're
notoriously dirty and spreading the virus, they're actually filling the landfills more, because people are now using these renewable or reusable bags as disposable bags.
Who would have thought that? Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah, we did.
Anyway.
How about this? How about the chicken leaks? We wipe it up. We think we got it all, but we didn't, right?
Right.
And now we're taking it back into the store.
Mm. Right. Exactly.
Nice.
Well, that's what happens, right? And that's how you spread germs. That's why things like paper bags, things like the plastic bags, these are things that I think, we evolved in this way for a reason, and I think that the when common sense prevailed, there's a reason we went to these types of things. Paper bags, by the way, were totally fine. It was we were destroying the environment, if you remember, right?
We were cutting down too many trees.
Cutting down way too many trees. It was no problem, though, for the liberal newspaper like the Buffalo News, right?
No.
Never a problem to talk about cutting down too many trees.
A forest a day to get the get their agenda out.
No, that's okay. But if you want to carry your groceries back in a paper bag, that was just killing way too many trees. So we had to go to plastic. Right. And we went to plastic. And plastic's okay. You know, we started to find other uses for plastic. We line our trash bins in our offices with them. Our boots as kids. We take them for dog cleanup when we're walking the dog and things like that, right? So we found other uses for these things, but now we can't have those either. So we're right back to basically reusable bags and no.
So big government has made it more expensive, less healthy, and now the potential to carry on the coronavirus. Yeah. Thank you.
Nice job.
Thank you.
Good work.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the law of unintended consequences.
Again, we did. Yes.
Anyway, so let's hope that we get some leadership out of Washington and really Congress. And I think the president needs to do a little better as well, but I think he's doing okay. It's funny because they asked him, by the way, Mike, they said, how would you rate yourself as a president on a scale of 1 to 10? What did you expect his answer to be?
10. Come on.
11. I'm surprised I didn't say 11.
What a stupid question.
11.
What a dumb question. Yeah, I give myself a 1. Come on.
You know, what he should have said if he was smart about it, but, I could have done some things better. I think I've done pretty good. Remember, I was the one closing China when they were making fun of me. But, I didn't do what I could have done a little bit more. I would rate myself probably, I would give myself maybe an A. Maybe an eight, maybe a seven. I think I'm always room for improvement. But he's just, he gave himself a 10. There's the one last thing, Wick, and then we'll go. And this is for the video folks that are watching this on video. Did you see his fake news hit when he talked about this in the press conference when he flips the paper?
No.
Oh, it's priceless. And maybe for the podcast, we can just edit this in. But let me replay it for you so you can know what it looks like. He takes a piece of paper and he just flicks it perfectly. He goes, I don't know where you guys get this from. This is not true. So obviously, so you guys all printed it. You'll apologize for it later. It's fake news. It is fake news. And he just flicks the paper and it was just perfect the way he flicked it. And so we'll make sure we get that video because he's just... Flick, fake news, and it's perfect, and it's just hilarious. And so hopefully we'll get some better leadership out of
Tuesday morning, 9:58 as we're doing this, and stocks are now negative slightly, so S&P down just about 5 points. So
Let's hope we get some a positive news throughout the day and something.
It's going to be the end of the day
on.
And to find some stability. And I continue to say we need to run out of sellers, which means please fix the uptick rule. This is a simple, easy fix that Democrats and Republicans should be able to do. And I don't know why this hasn't been done 2 weeks ago.
This is a lot of easy moves they can make in the next couple of days, and that's why, folks, it's very as Mike says, don't make the mistake of panicking going to cash, because a couple of announcements from Washington can change the dynamic here. Just as we go down 300,000 points, we can go back up 3,000 points, right? You don't want to lock in the downside. So
Kudlow should be all over this, and he's got the president's both ears, not just one, but two. Yep. So,
but that's what we need to get done, and we'll see if that happens this week. So,
no doubt.
Again, if you need it throughout the week, if you're nervous, if you need a shoulder to lean on, obviously this is stressful for everybody. Hey, we're stressed too, right? We have employees and clients that we're taking care of, and it's a stressful time for everybody, but we'll get through it, and, the markets have never gone to zero. We've always come out of these things, and if we just keep our heads about us, you can make sure that you don't do any lasting damage to your portfolio and just ride this kind of thing out. Take advantage of it where you can. We talked about rebalancing and adding more money and things like that, but don't make panic decisions that are going to lock in losses and put yourself in a bad position. If you need us, use us as a resource. 833-FIN-GUYS. Again, 833-FIN-GUYS. Or you can go to our website, ask us a question through there, or just find out more information on what we do at thefinancialguys.com. Don't forget, you can follow us on social media, although I got to be honest, I've not been as active just because we're busy managing money and not as active, unfortunately, in our ability to keep up with some of the social media stuff. So we'll get back to that when things maybe settle down a bit. But we are normally very active on Facebook and Twitter. We also have our YouTube channel. We may be watching this podcast on YouTube. We appreciate that. If you are, by the way, give us a thumbs up. Hit the like button. That helps us out a lot. And share this podcast and the YouTube video with your friends as well. And then we also have Instagram, I think. Am I missing anything? Instagram, YouTube, any of them all. So go to our website. You can find all the links right there at thefinancialguys.com. All right. Anything else you want to add, Mike?
Nope.
All right.
Keep it a good week. Keep positive, and we'll get through this mess.
All right. On behalf of Mike Lomas, I'm Glenn Wiggle. Thanks for listening, or thanks for watching. You've been watching the Financial Guys podcast, and good luck this week.